Hello, and thank you for joining us. This is Paul Saunders, President of the Center for the National Interest, and thank you for tuning in again to the Three Questions podcast. I'm very pleased to be here today with my colleague at the Center for the National Interest, Jay Koo. Dr. Koo is our senior fellow in U.S.-Korea relations, and he's previously been founder and the director of the U.S.-Korea Institute at the Johns Hopkins University School of International Studies. He directed the Human Rights in North Korea project at Freedom House, and he's done and is doing a lot of other really interesting things, including actually producing some award-winning historical documentaries about Korea. So, Jay, thank you very much for joining us today on Three Questions.
Thank you, Paul, for having me here.
So we're going to talk today about the U.S.-Korea summit. Korea's new president, President Lee, is coming to Washington to visit with President Trump. We're recording this a little bit before the summit, and it'll come out actually on the day of the summit. Just for our listeners, this is not a post-summit conversation. It's a pre-summit conversation. But Jay, you know, tell me, please, as you look ahead to this meeting, what do you think are the biggest issues on the agenda in the U.S.-Korea relationship, and what do you think will be the biggest topics at the summit?
So I think this is a very much needed summit that the Korean government wanted. This is something that the Korean government had been wanting to have with the newly elected President Trump since November of last year. And when the former president declared martial law, and then Korea went into a political domestic nosedive for the past December through when the snap election was called in June, Korea didn't really have a way to communicate with the new Trump administration. And Trump administration declined to take calls from anyone in Korea because it was just not, you know, there was no one really that could speak on behalf of the government. So the South Korean government public officials met at the working level. And so when President Lee Jae-myung was elected in June, the very first thing he wanted to do was send a message to the Trump administration. But by this time, what happened was, on the U.S. side, the Trump administration declaring all kinds of imposition of tariffs to our trade partners and everyone else, friends, foes alike. And so until the new president was elected, Korea didn't have a way to voice some kind of negotiation leverage with the Trump administration. And so President Lee comes wanting to really send a clear message that his government is interested and wanting to maintain, and not just maintain, but strengthen the U.S.-Korea economic relationship and the security relationship, and also to dispel the kind of the view, and it's been voiced by some of the President Trump's MAGA loyalists, that the new president of South Korea is everything from communist to anti-American political leader, etc. And he really has worked hard to dispel that. And he really wants to show the Americans that he is a centrist, that he's a pragmatist. And so here are some of the things that he did. Soon as he's elected, he's sending all the right signals. President Xi Jinping of China invites him to attend the China Victory Parade on September 3rd. And he sits on the invitation. He doesn't want to send any kind of hint or message to the Chinese that he's considering coming or contemplating, because he wants to send a message to Washington that his first visit, or, you know, visit to the U.S. will take precedent over going to Beijing. And so he did that. And then when the summit was announced after the trade agreement that narrowed lowered the Trump's announcement of 25% tariff on Korean products to 15%, and this was a real starting point. But the Korean president is really coming to begin a kind of a personal report and having a relationship with President Trump, who I believe he's never met. And so he wants to do that. And so a successful summit is in which there are a lot of good photo ops, and they will do their very best to kind of put forward all the good things about U.S.-Korea relationship, highlighting what was recently agreed, the investment of some $350 billion. You know, the details have yet to be worked out, but largely the Koreans said, we're going to buy $100 billion of U.S. energy. They will invest something like $150 billion and make America shipbuilding great again, so to speak, in which Korean companies will invest in shipyards and technology and again, receive Washington's blessing to build ships for the United States Navy.
You know, looking ahead at the meeting, how do you think it's going to go? Do you think it's going to succeed for the U.S. and for Korea? Is there a risk of some kind of a big blow-up?
There are lots of risks here. And that risk mitigation, I'm sure the Korean president has really played this over and over again, and which is to deal with a very unpredictable President Trump. And so here are some kind of landmine issues. For example, the cost of hosting U.S. troops in Korea, something like, I think, 28,000 troops are stationed in South Korea. And this host nation support is around $1.2 billion. And the Trump administration, in the first administration, it was a little under $1 billion. And if you read some of the accounts of his first administration cabinet members, President Trump was adamant, angry about the alliance relationship and the lack of host nation support in his mind. He thought it should be somewhere close to $5 billion. And he was on record to have demanded his cabinet members go tell the Koreans to we'll pull troops out if it's not $5 billion. And so this kind of rhetoric, if President Trump says something about the increase that is beyond incremental increase, that will create a lot of political backlash. The other is another security issue is if the U.S. government really asks and kind of demands, and both sides are agreed that the alliance relationship should modernize, but there is this issue of strategic flexibility for U.S. troops. The U.S. troops are there, and by agreement, by tradition, it's really kind of look forward looking only towards North Korea. So some kind of contingency with North Korea. But given where we are with the United States relationship with China, our defense posture in Asia is to be able to attend crises in around China, specifically Taiwan. And U.S. has been pushing the South Korean government to modernize the alliance relationship in which U.S. troops can be redeployed, but also there are, I think, push for South Korea to be more proactive, not just simply allowing U.S. troops to be redeployed, but actually being a partner in some of these activities. It's a very tricky and touchy issue for Koreans because this government and this political leader is a progressive leader in which is very, a vocal base. And also many of his cabinet members are opposed to the kind of changing the alliance relationship that might put Korea in some kind of crosshairs with China. And so this is a very political touchy issue. And if anything, President Lee would try to evade these kinds of issues. Another issue is somehow going backwards on the trade issues. We know the trade agreement is now, the tariff would be at 15%. Details haven't been worked out. But if President Trump says, hey, we can do more, and then, you know, White House meeting with, you know, President Lee in front of the press kind of puts him in a corner and says, hey, Korea needs to do more. You know, this could create issues, especially if President Trump mentions the need for more liberalization of Korea's agricultural product importation, especially beef and rice. This is true for Japan, and this is true for Korea, that there would be such hard political backlash for him domestically that it would be really troublesome for him. And again, he would probably like to avoid this issue. And so there are lots of other issues. On North Korea, I think he would be open and encouraging the administration to work towards some kind of eventual peaceful negotiation with North Korea in the denuclearization. But unlike his some of the more progressive supporters, I don't think he will be asking for any relief in North Korean sanctions. But I think there will be some kind of a nudging of the administration to modify some kind of approach to North Korea. But again, he doesn't want to open it up too much where, you know, Trump decides to run with it, let's say. Let's say, like in his first administration, begin the kind of one-to-one negotiations with North Korea if South Korea is not involved in it. And so the Koreans are always afraid of, you know, negotiating, dealing with North Korea in which they're not a part of the convening party. And so that is also a very serious concern for the Korean government. But these are, I think, issues that the Korean government will try to mitigate, hopefully not be really discussed, and then handle this after the summit by the working level experts.
So this is three questions. We had two questions. Now it's time for the last question. The last question, you know, as you look ahead at the next kind of 3.5 years of the Trump administration, we're going to have President Trump, you know, a Republican president with really a lot of, you know, new views and ideas about how U.S. alliances should work. You alluded to that a little bit in your previous answer. We got on the Korean side, you know, kind of a new elective center president who clearly, as you've described, you know, is trying to build a relationship with President Trump and sustain and maybe evolve a little bit a relationship with the United States. But, you know, he faces his own political constraints domestically, as you describe. How do you think you play this whole thing plays out over the course of the rest of Trump's term? Is there a chance for the two of them really, you know, to build a close new working relationship, modernize the alliance, et cetera, et cetera? Or do we have something that maybe falls short of that?
I'm an optimist. So I actually think this will be better U.S.-Korea relations than the progressive governments of the past. And here's why I think this is so. Because his predecessors who come from the Democratic Party, the Progressive Party, Democratic Party, their one of the real top priority was North Korea, finding some kind of a peaceful inter-Korean relations, and that was driven by President Kim Dae-jung, President Roh Moo-hyun, President Moon Jae-in, but not with President Lee. His focus, even during the campaign, has been very much about Korea's economic development in certain sectors, in the kind of the technological advanced industries. You know, you and I've discussed about these multi-billion-dollar project that's going to go in the Southwest Province, city area of Henam. They're initially going to spend $5 billion putting the kind of the groundwork for one of the largest data centers in the world. I mean, President Lee has said on record that he would like for Korea to be in the top three artificial intelligence centers in the world. And so his pragmatic approach is about economics. Yes, he has a very strong core base that wants to improve relations with North Korea. And then he certainly, I'm sure, believes that and supports that. But he is not driven by that. And I think he's also very pragmatic about where the Korean government, the South Korean government, can do with its northern brethren, especially in the last several years, when in which the the Kim Jong-un, North Korea's leader, has basically cut off all relationship with South Korea and went backwards by destroying all the progresses made by his predecessor governments, President Lee's predecessor governments. And so having said that, I think in that approach, South Korea is much more meaningful partner for the U.S. And even for this kind of progressive government to accept that, yes, the alliance relationship has to mature more and that it has to evolve to meet the future needs, and which is a great first step. And so in return, and this is the one thing that the Korean government can, I think, place on the Trump administration's agenda, which is the OPCON control. It's the control of the military during the time of crisis and war. In principle, both countries have agreed, but there have to be certain things that need to be met before the control can be completely given over to the South Korean military. And I think they will work on this and try to expedite it. And in doing so, I think South Korea has to meet certain requirements, which will also deepen the U.S.-Korea relationship. And so unless the U.S. makes some really serious unilateral declarations on the Korean Peninsula, I think the next 3.5 years will be actually quite impactful and smooth in ways that we probably weren't thinking about a very right-of-center government in the United States and a left-of-center government. But as we have experienced in our own history, only Nixon could have opened up China, right? I mean, so a progressive government kind of leading this kind of renewed U.S.-Korea relationship, I think there's a lot of potential here.
Thank you so much, Jay, for that optimistic look ahead. Again, for those of you listening, this is Paul Saunders and the Three Questions podcast with my Center for the National Interest colleague, Jay Koo, our senior fellow for U.S.-Korea relations. Jay, thanks so much for joining us, and hope to have you on again sometime soon.
Very good. Thank you. Very much enjoyed it, Paul.